This is Jason Fitzgerald, and you're listening to the Over the Cap podcast, the podcast that discusses all things related to NFL contracts, free agency, and of course, the NFL salary cap. And in tonight's episode, we're going to be discussing the New York Giants, look at some of the things that they've done in 2018 and before that, that's kind of led them to the situation that they're in, see where they're at with the salary cap and what they can do to improve that situation in 2019. And of course, take all your questions that I got on Twitter. I did get a large number of questions, just quickly glancing at them. I have a feeling we'll touch on a couple of those things during the course of the podcast, but we'll get to all those questions at the end. Maybe talk about some of the things a little bit more in depth than I do right now. But if you're interested in the New York Giants, this is probably the episode that you're going to be the most interested in. If you haven't listened before, you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, what else? Google Play. And I think we're submitted now to Spotify. So I think you can listen to the podcast there. I got to get a link up to that. I don't have that up right now, but I think if you search for us there, you can find the podcast on Spotify if that's the way that you choose to listen to it. Hopefully everyone had a good Christmas and holiday season, and everyone is hopefully gearing up for a festive New Year's. Season obviously ends this week for the teams that we've been looking at, like the Cardinals and the Raiders and the Jets and the 49ers and now the Giants. The season, it's mercifully coming to an end. We'll see a large number of coaches that are going to get fired probably on Monday. And now you make that turn when you're some of these bad teams. You make that turn to next season and you start looking forward to the draft. You look forward to free agency and you look at ways that you can improve your team next year so you're not going through this kind of situation again. So we're going to jump into that in just a little bit here. We've got the Dogfish Head 60-minute IPA, so we're going through that tonight. I did never find my Southern Tier 2 Xmas, so unfortunately, I'm going to go the season without that one this year. So better luck next year for me on that. My brother did get me a nice assortment of Dogfish Head beers, so we'll probably be having some of those over the next couple weeks. He did get me the 120. Which for those of you who are into the IPAs is kind of like the, I think at least one of the holy grails of the IPA world. It's pretty strong, so we'll save that for a special occasion. That'll probably take me a long time to drink through, but, expect some Dogfish Head over the next couple podcasts that we do. And I just wanted to thank everybody for purchasing Crunching Numbers during the holiday season. The book jumped back up into the top 100 on Amazon's bestseller list for American football books. And that's pretty good for a book that's been out for a couple of years now. We've fluctuated a lot on the, you know, where that book ranks, basically based on time of year. It's usually kind of a seasonal book as you get into free agency. But I'm glad some of you certainly purchased it for Christmas. Hopefully, if you're reading it now, you're finding it useful, you're finding it enjoyable and helping you improve your understanding of NFL contracts and the CBA and the salary cap. And, you know, if you haven't tried it yet and you're kind of on the fence about it, really what the Crunching Numbers does is we break down the entire collective bargaining agreement and how contracts are structured, ways you can manage your salary cap and everything else. In pretty generalized terms, we use a lot of real-world examples for stuff that you would find, you know, on ESPN or Pro Football Talk or some of the larger websites, or, you know, of course, something like OTC if you really wanted to get more into the way the breakdowns work when the full contract numbers are either released or were able to kind of verify them through league source. It really breaks that stuff down, and you can really get a much better understanding of it. The book is in most front offices these days. They have copies that are passed around just for people to look at and check out, especially if you work in scouting or something like that. If you have any questions about it, feel free to email me, jason@overthecap.com, and I'll be more than happy to answer some of those questions about the book. One of the questions that we do get a lot on it is it still valid? Because, you know, it was released 2 years ago, I think 2 Septembers ago. It was released, or maybe 3 Septembers ago. As long as the current CBA is in place, it's going to be valid. And even if the next CBA is really just an extension, it's probably still going to be valid because the rules aren't going to change. There were some rule changes in the old CBAs, as it related to proration and different kind of things. And there were certainly changes that happened between the 2010 CBA and the 2011 CBA, or I guess I should say the 2006 CBA, which officially ended in 2010. But, you know, the book is still valid. So if you're thinking about that, yeah, it's still going to give you information that applies to today's NFL and the way that teams approach contracts and the salary cap. So enough with that, though. Let's jump into the New York Giants. And it's been another disappointing year, I would think, if you were a Giants fan. The Giants, I think, really misread what the situation was with their team. The Giants, for a long time, I think, had kind of hit kind of a bad path. They got into this kind of rut where you kind of look back at those championship teams that they had with Eli Manning, the two titles that they won with him and Tom Coughlin. And I think sometimes you have a very hard time of letting go when you see those, those highlight years. And if you just go through this, I'm just pulling up the records here from 2011 on. It's just been a negative trajectory the whole time. So you went 9-7 with the Super Bowl win. Then you went 9-7 the following year. Then the next year you go 7-9, 6-10, 6-10. You have the bounce back where you have the big free agency spending year. McAdoo is in his first year as head coach. That's kind of common that you get those bounces when you get that new coach that comes in there. They do make the playoffs. It's a one and done. Three wins this year. They're going to either be a 5 or a 6 win team. And this is a situation that probably should have started to get resolved in 2013 or 2014. It's not that dissimilar from a team, I think, like the Cardinals, who I talked about last week, where you have that run and you see some of those same faces on the field. In the Giants case, it was you saw Eli Manning, you saw Tom Coughlin on the sideline, you saw someone like a Jason Pierre-Paul still there, and you say to yourself, well, this team should still be competitive because these guys have won before. They've been parts of a championship. And then you added someone like an Odell Beckham, who obviously was a kind of a phenomenon when he first came into the league, at least for a little while there. And, they made that jump then into free agency the one year with a number of high-risk contracts. And this is one of the problems when you have a general manager who very clearly is kind of on, that life raft is out there for him. He's on his last legs and he's trying to do something that gives him a chance to save his job. And at that point, the only thing that you really can do is go into free agency and go out there and get whatever you can. You win the offseason battle by doing that. So you kind of get your name out of those discussions, out of those fan discussions about how the team is going nowhere and how they're not doing anything to improve the team, because you've spent all this money on players and you've got that new head coach now, because you've tried to pin a little bit maybe on that is that, Coughlin was a little bit out of touch and everything else, and you needed a new offense, you needed a new system, and you bring in the new coach to do it. And it was a blip forward, but a monstrous step back, I think, for the franchise. You look at the deals that they did that year, and I don't have them right in front of me. I could pull them up, but just going off the top of my head, because I think universally most of these contracts were panned. So you've got the Vernon contract, where they make him one of the highest paid defensive ends in the NFL. Vernon was a transition player, I believe, at one point, and Miami dropped that designation on him, which allowed him to become a pure free agent to where a deal couldn't be matched. He was never an elite pass rusher. He jumped up in his production as he went towards free agency. He's a good all-around player, but he's not a great rusher. And the Giants paid him as if he was a one step below a Von Miller, and he's not even close to that. And, you know, he has not been productive. He's been hurt the last 2 years, really. There's not much you can say about it. It was a bad deal when it was signed. It continues to be a bad deal today. But it was a deal that they made because they felt as if they needed a pass rusher because the defense was looking so bad. Pierre Paul, I believe, was coming off his fireworks injury, I think, the year that they did that. That may have actually been the same year. So they may not have known that he was going to get that yet. But either way, they wanted to bring in something to improve that rush. Then they went out with Janoris Jenkins, and you know, they paid him to be a number one corner. He's not bad. He's not great, though, either. I think even Peter King was questioning that deal as to where that number came from when they came out with that contract for him for 11 plus. Those were two big ones. Then you had the Ellison signing, which was $5 million for a fullback slash H-back slash tight end slash whatever. And I know that, you know, he might be a guy that people like. You know, he's a good person for the coaching and the coaches and everything else, but you just don't pay that kind of money for that position. It's just reckless. And Damon Harrison, terrific run defender. The league is not geared towards the run. Yes, I know the Cowboys with Ezekiel Elliott, that was not the consideration at the time. Run stuffers in the NFL generally have been paid in the $5 to $6 million range. When they signed Harrison ended up going for 925, I think it was. And then the year after that was the year they franchised Pierre Paul. And then they signed him to the lucrative extension. And it was just a series of bad moves that really put the Giants in a bad position with their salary cap. They're still in a bad position with their salary cap, in part because of these contracts, which are relatively unmovable. They had high guarantees, but more so than that, they were structured in ways that made it very difficult to move the players. And large signing bonuses, you were going to get hit with big dead money if you moved on from any of these players. And so they were kind of in a position where you kind of grin and bear it. I thought maybe they would have moved one or two of them this year. They did eventually move on from Harrison during the middle of the season, but none of the other guys, they kept them. And I think that was a foolish decision. The Giants should have been looking at themselves as a rebuilding team. I mean, again, those records, 6-6, 11-3. How do you look at that and say to yourself, okay, this is a team that is just a couple of pieces away? You can't. It's the way that it's going is just in a really bad direction. And you don't fix those teams generally with veterans. Generally, you fix those teams with younger players and you're going to augment them with veterans. And the Giants, they just approached it in the wrong manner, I think. You look at some of the moves that Dave Gettleman made when he was brought in, and there is no way that you can look at the decisions that were made by the Giants this year and say they were nothing but a short-term, I don't even know if you call it a Band-Aid, because I think they really thought that they were a playoff team. I think that they pinned all their issues on the coach last year and the issues that he had with dealing with the players and maybe the organization as well. They put themselves in a bad spot, and they doubled down on it being bad. So they trade away Pierre Paul, which he was probably, of all the players that were there, he was probably the best one. That also probably meant that he was going to have the most trade value, but he was the player that they moved. And surprisingly, they moved him, and I'm going to assume it's just because the other players could only be cut. They didn't have trade value, so they kept those guys. You go into the draft, and you have that once in a lifetime opportunity to get a quarterback, and they don't do that. So they get the running back, which is the short-term solution. They stick with Eli Manning. They make a trade for a linebacker, Alec Ogletree. That's a terrible trade. And again, you can point, just like people are going to do with Barkley, as to the players had an okay season. You know, at times been good. You know, Ogletree had the one game where he had the couple interceptions. I think one was returned for touchdown, maybe even two. I don't know. But they're not moves that build you for a long term. You know, signing Jonathan Stewart, just absolutely questionable. Keeping Eric Flowers as long as they did, it's just questionable. Signing the guard. You realize right away some of those things aren't going to work out. You should figure that out certainly in the summer, if not before that. But they make these moves. They bring in Solder from the New England Patriots to play left tackle. They do draft a guard and Hernandez. They bring in some guys like that. But the gist of it is they saw this as a team that could be fixed in the short term, but it still was going to have those same problems, that same backbone of problems that were there, and they still exist, and they're going to have a harder time fixing it because the Giants were better than last year. Part of it is the schedule has probably been a little bit easier, but the main thing is that they did add enough to improve a little bit, but what they added was not going to improve you from 3 to 13 or 3 to 10. It was going to improve you from 3 to 4 or 3 to 5, 3 to 6. And that's what they did. But unfortunately, when you get to 6 or 5, that generally takes you out of the running for a quarterback. And it doesn't seem as if this is even a good year for quarterbacks, is what people say. And that brings you back to last year's draft decision. And in my opinion, it was just one of the worst decisions that a franchise could ever make. So you've got a quarterback in Eli Manning who is, to put it generously, out of his prime. That's really the best way that you can put it. You have an opportunity because you have the number two pick in the draft. So first of all, you're in a position to get a quarterback, just by virtue of being, you know, in the top five, top six, top seven picks. You're lucky enough to be in that top six, seven picks when it's a quarterback-heavy class. So you have a pick of what should be a good group of players. You don't get those too often. You're number two. The odds of getting the second pick, you know, for as bad as the season may have been last year, that should be your silver lining. You're going to have the pick of all but one, at the most, all but one of the quarterbacks who's there. And instead, they select the running back. And it's like those stars don't align very often. And that's why when you're in that top of the draft and you're desperate for a quarterback, usually you take one or you find a way to get one. When you look at the successful quarterbacks in the NFL, there's two groups. So the primary group are guys who are selected pretty much all top 10. I think there's a little quirk where you probably go to number 11. 11 is probably where you get Roethlisberger. That's probably where you get Deshaun Watson. Is Jay Cutler in 11? I can't remember on that one, though. Not that Jay Cutler was good, but he was a passable professional quarterback. Kind of drove you crazy at times, but you pretty much need to be there. You need to be right around number 10 or higher. And you have to get lucky enough to be in the top 10 or in a position to get there when it's a season that has a lot of quarterbacks. You know, as a Jets fan, I can speak to some of those years where the Jets did pick number one, and you ended up with someone like a Keyshawn Johnson. Again, decent pro career, not a game changer, not a difference maker. The Giants opted for running back. It's the least valued position in the NFL. It's that position that you can get in a lot of spots. Quarterback now, the only other spot you're really going to find a quarterback is if you get lucky in those later rounds. the odds are much, much, much lower than with that top pick. But, you know, that's where you find your Russell Wilsons, Dak Prescott's, Tony Romo's, good quarterbacks. Some more than good. Obviously, Tom Brady, you know, will spring to mind. But the percentage of those players that you hit on is generally very low. So you had a great opportunity and you pretty much blew it. Now, is it possible that Gettleman looks at those four quarterbacks that were available? Maybe he was in love with Mayfield. Mayfield goes off the board because he goes to the Browns. Is it possible that he looked at Darnold, Allen, and Rosen and said, these guys are all busts? It's possible. I don't think that you can discount that. But that's the only logical reason that there would be to not select the quarterback in that spot. It's the only logical reason. Only one. To take a running back, because even if you pass on the quarterback in that spot, the positions of value that you have to be looking at are pass rushers, cornerbacks, and left tackles. Those are the positions of value that are going to be there outside of the QB. So if you've decided that the QBs are a bust, you know that they're going to be a bust. You know that Darnold is going to be just atrocious at the pro level. You're so confident in it. Well, no matter how good Barkley is going to be, he has to be so much better than every other running back in the NFL to justify that investment there that it just makes it an impossible pick. And Barkley's been everything that anyone ever could have hoped for. He would be the closest thing, I guess, to someone like a Le'Veon Bell when Bell was, you know, a big focal point on the Steelers. I don't think it's fair to say he's a Barry Sanders yet, but he's pretty much like a Le'Veon Bell. You know, you can feed him. He's going to be out there all the time. He's going to break a couple big plays. He's good in the passing game. But still, you're not a winning football team. And now you're just not in that position to really grab a quarterback either. The Giants right now are tied, I think, with the Bills for the 7th pick in the draft, so that's a coin flip. So, okay, you're still in the top 10, but it's not a quarterback-heavy draft. So this is not the year that you probably want to be in there, because now you're going to be getting a quarterback, and if you take one, you're probably definitely reaching for one. But you're kind of between a rock and a hard place with it, because now you look at the way the rest of the team is built. And a lot of this isn't Gettleman's fault per se. You know, a lot of this, or most of it, goes back to Reese. But you look at the guys on the team. So you've got Barkley, who's in his first year. So he's going into his second year. Most running backs, realistically, are going to be done after year four, year five. Some guys who are going to produce after that. But if you want to get his dynamic playmaking ability, you're really looking at it in the next 2 to 3 years. You spent a relatively high pick on Sterling Shepard, who's a pretty good number two. You spent a high pick on Evan Ingram, who is hit or miss, but clearly the talent is there. And you spent a lot of money on Odell Beckham, who probably, it's tough to say it, but Odell Beckham has probably seen his best days already come and go. I think you have to be worried with Beckham at this point. He was hurt a lot last year. He's been hurt this year. Was not as productive this year as he had been in the past. He's got his moments. He's got those games where you just shake your head and you're just amazed at what he can do. But he was not as consistent as he was in the past, and that explosiveness did not seem the same as it was those first couple years in the NFL. Traditionally, and again, this doesn't apply to everybody. You know, obviously there's an Antonio Brown out there for, you know, every couple Dez Bryants. But traditionally, a lot of the players hit that peak year four, year five, year six, and then it begins to drop down. This is Beckham's fifth year in the NFL. He's going to hit year six. Year four, year five were not as productive as those first couple of seasons. I would say that the consistency wasn't there as much with Beckham. And you can blame a lot of it on the quarterback, but it doesn't matter. That quarterback is the main cog that's going to drive the way that passing game works. You can have great receivers. They're not going to make a quarterback passable. Larry Fitzgerald has been as great of a receiver as there's been in this generation. Larry Fitzgerald did not make Kevin Cobb a great player. He didn't make any of those low-level guys that Arizona tried to go out there with, your Matt Barkley's of the world. He didn't turn them into stars. He didn't cover for their flaws. When he was paired up with Kurt Warner and he was paired up with Carson Palmer, yeah, he helped bring them to a level maybe they hadn't been in some time. Or maybe hadn't been in ever. Pretty much sometime. Warner was certainly there before. And Palmer probably was as well. But either way, he brought them up a level and they brought him up a level. It was something that had to be done together. You can't expect Odell Beckham to take an Eli Manning, who quite honestly is closer to the Kevin Cobb at this point of his career than he is the Kurt Warner, and expect to elevate him by pairing him with these guys. It doesn't work that way. It just doesn't. They're going to have moments where you'll get a couple games, and Eli Manning had a couple of those games this year. But you know who else had games like that, working with a good group of skill players? Ryan Fitzpatrick. That's kind of what you're talking about now. And the Giants are going to waste the years of all these guys that they have in their primes, some of whom are going to be pretty expensive or are already expensive, and you're going to look back 2-3 years from now and go, what happened? Because you're either going to trot Manning out there multiple times, or you're going to go out there with a Fitzpatrick or a Josh McCown or, you know, any number of these journeyman quarterbacks who just kind of float from team to team and happen to get starting jobs. And the next spot that the Giants are probably going to have to look in free agency, and I know I have questions about it, so I'll hold off a little on those names, but it's probably going to be to go into free agency and you find a player who's been given up on by another team. Might it be through a trade even? It's possible. But you know the names I'm thinking here is someone like a Marcus Mariota, someone like a Jameis Winston. That success, they haven't been successful really where they're at either. Might they become available because the price is too high for those teams? Maybe they will. But that's probably not going to take you to the next level. It's not going to help you get something more out of the talent that you have because the time is now. And the way this team was built, it was built to have a new quarterback come in this year and be ready to really hit it running next year, to where you still had Beckham in his prime, Shepard in his prime, Ingram in his prime, and you can find a running back somewhere else. But now that they have that guy, it just makes it even worse when you look at the quarterback situation. And even if the Giants had ended up in a position to draft a quarterback, it still doesn't make it the right move. And that's the other thing where it's a topic that doesn't seem to ever have any kind of rational discussion. But the fact is, the Giants took Barkley and they thought they were a playoff team. Their expectation was to not be back in the top 5, 6, 7 of the draft. So if they ended up with that top pick this year, number 2, number 3, that's just lucking into something. You know, I talk about how the Jets kind of lucked into Darnold because they made a blind trade up and the Giants didn't take him. So they got him just because he was sitting there. It would be the same logic. The Giants' logic wasn't, okay, we'll take Barkley and we'll get the quarterback next year. The Giants' logic was, we'll take Barkley, we're going to go to the playoffs, and then we'll deal with it after that. So even if they would have ended up with a great quarterback, and maybe they will end up with a great quarterback, it still doesn't make the decision-making process the right one, because this isn't what was expected. So it's not a good situation, I don't think, for them. I think it's pretty bad that way. You look at how they're built. Let's just break down some of their contract things here, just look a little at their tendencies and stuff. Giants have struggled tremendously in the draft. Only 39.7% of their players are homegrown talents. That means players that they either drafted or signed initially as a free agent. The undrafted free agent. The only team that's worse than that than them is the Buffalo Bills at 36.2. Those are the only two teams with under 40%. That's awful. There's no other way to put it. The drafts that the Giants had under Reese were atrocious. So it's not all Gettleman's fault. They're trying to fix years and years of mistakes. But that's just a rough place to be. Giants' success in the later rounds has been really bad. You look at the picks that they've had here by round, and the Giants are, while they're on the lower end in those top couple of rounds, they still have at least a handful of players. When you move into those later rounds, you're looking at four players on a roster, three players, that's not even homegrown, that's just guys who they've signed. So you don't have a lot of success in those homegrown drafts. Let me just pull up their numbers here. Giants have four first-rounders. Make sure I got this right. Yep. Four first-rounders, four second, three-thirds, four-fourths, two from the fifth. They've got no players from the sixth and the seventh. They did sign some UDFAs this year that have stuck around, so they're kind of average when it comes to that. In the league. Just to give you an idea of the talent level that the Giants do have now, and I know everyone points to those couple of star players, 32% of the Giants' homegrown players come from the undrafted category. That's sixth highest in the NFL. Now, that could be considered something that's very good, right? But for the most part, it just means that they've had to fill a bunch of holes really with cheaper talent, in part because of the way that they've struggled with the draft. It's certainly Gettleman's team. When you look at this, the Giants have 68% of their contracts were signed this year. So the decisions pretty much lie with him. Yeah, you've got those Vernons and the Jenkins and stuff that are not his fault. But the majority of the roster decisions, they're his. That's on him. So this is his roster. It's getting to be, I guess, whatever his vision would be. You look at the type of players that they've had to go after, and the Giants are tied for third in the NFL with the most street free agents on the team with 23. So what that means is they went and they took a lot of players who were cut from other teams, whether those were veteran players or those were rookie players. That's a high number. The only teams with more are the Cardinals, Raiders, and Redskins are tied with them. Those aren't the kind of teams that you want to be tied with. Giants only have 18 players that were drafted, not necessarily by them, but just were originally draft picks on their team. That's towards the bottom of the NFL as well. You have players that are signed on extensions. There's only three. The only teams worse than that are the Jets and the Bills. Excuse me. That, again, that just tells you to the lack of quality that the team has had in the draft, that they don't have players worth extending. You look at free agent signings, they're kind of average on there with 11. That's right around the league average for unrestricteds. So you just look overall at their team, and it's a team that you probably don't think much of in the way that they're built. And you look at just the way that their contracts have been done, and I think this was always pretty telling as well. The Giants have a lot of high-priced players. The Giants lead the NFL with the amount of players that are signed for over $15 million a year. But then as you start to drop down in categories, you know, it lessens out. So they have two players between 10 and 15. And then when you get into those other categories, you know, 5 to 10 million, where are the Giants? Second to last in the NFL with three. Players between 1.5 and 5 million, where are the Giants? Let's see. Giants are sixth from the bottom when it comes to that. And then you look at the categories of between 790 and 1.5 million. This means an over-reliance on cheap veteran players for the most part. Giants, 14 players. That is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5th in the NFL. Players under 790, that basically means a lot of low-level rookies. Giants, 30 players. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6th in the NFL. So the Giants have a couple of high-priced players, and everybody else is basically cheap. And that's not a winning strategy in the NFL. That's not the way that you build a winning roster in the NFL. And if you're a Giants fan, I think you have to hope that that changes. You need to really, if you're going to be a veteran team, you're going to go after veterans, you need those 5 to 10 million categories to be up. You need those 790s and, you know, the 2 million or so. You need those to be down. You don't want to have your roster rely on players like that who are really one and done types. Now, again, maybe they were in a position where they have to do it. But, you know, that it's not a good place to be. If you look at some of the benefits on the team, they're not that old overall. Their average age is 26, basically, a little under 26. That's not too bad, all things considered, especially, you know, Eli is older, so he's going to skew that number a bit. And they do have a couple of veterans on there, but that's not an awful number to be at. So they do have some young players, at least, who are there. Overall, it's hard to really tell if the Gettleman stuff is going to last here. The Reese stuff. So the Giants right now, if you look at Giants are heavy injury guarantee team, second most in the NFL for what they give out there. In terms of full guarantees, they are third in the NFL. So, I mean, this is really just overall is going to be, it's the kind of contracts that are attractive to players. Probably not going to be too beneficial for the team unless you don't screw up anywhere. Giants are number 11 when it comes to the amount of money being paid in a signing bonus. So quite honestly, this is getting to the point where you say this is just a mess when it comes to the way that their salary cap is managed. Roster bonuses, kind of middle of the league. That's just one of those accepted things. Per game bonuses, they are pretty much at the bottom, meaning they don't use them. And your workout bonuses, those kind of meaningless, but they're number 10 in the league with that. So you look at those guarantees that they give out. You look at the high signing bonuses. You look at the lack of per game bonuses, and you say, this is a team I want to go negotiate with because my players can basically go to the Giants, probably not care about doing much anything, and they're going to make a ton of money, and they're not going to be able to get moved off the team. It's salary cap mismanagement is really what's gone on in New York. I don't think there's any other way to put it. Now, one of the other things that you can look at, one of the things that you would look at here is the Panthers, because that's where Gettleman is coming from. Maybe that gives a better idea as to what they could change. So the Panthers were much lower in injury guarantees, in fact, towards the bottom of the NFL. they were middle of the pack in your full guarantees, high in their signing bonus numbers, so that's probably going to stay the same. Middle of the road with per game bonuses, as well as roster bonuses, and higher on the workouts. So, you know, if Gettleman is going to come in and make any changes, it would probably be that they're going to offer less guarantees, but maybe a higher signing bonus. And the Panthers are not a model of anything good when it came to salary cap stuff, but that's probably a better strategy than going really everywhere with it, where you're high full, high injury, high signing bonus, low per game. It's a recipe for disaster when things don't work out and you go into free agency a lot. So we'll tie most of that down on Reese, but the Giants have to change in that regard if they really want to make it so they never have a situation like this again if they do decide to go into free agency and sign a lot of players. So that is something that absolutely has to change, probably more so than anything else. You look at the Giants, let's see, their salary cap situation for next year. So right now we project the Giants to have, once they're done with their future signings, and what that means is come this Monday, all the practice squad players are going to have their contracts expire. Most of those players will be signed to what's called a futures contract. And that just means they're allowed to sign now a contract that isn't valid until the 2019 league year starts. So when they sign those players, their roster will go from 38 to probably, I don't know how many of them they'll sign, but let's say it'll go to 46. And then there'll be a couple of veterans who, you know, were probably on the practice squad during the course of the year that they want to bring back, or younger guys who are on the practice squad during the year, maybe a couple of veterans who just aren't on NFL rosters that they'll sign for the minimums on the futures deal. So you'll get up to 51. So once that happens, they'll probably have about $26 million in cap space. When it comes to free agents next year, let's just see who they have to... Or actually, before that, I probably should look at the draft. So you look at the money that's going to be allocated towards the draft. So of that $25 million, let's just assume the Giants end up with maybe the eighth pick in the draft. Let's see. Let's see where that puts us. And let me see where we have them now with the quote-unquote coin flip. And I'll just go with whatever number that is going to be. That'll just be easier for me to quickly add up. So we have them starting with the eighth pick. And the Giants will have a first and second rounder, three in the fourth, some in the fifth. What's their rookie pool looking like? About $10.2 million in the rookie pool, but that's one, two, three. Looks like 11 players. So, you know, close to $5 million of that will be shaved off. So we'll call it $6 million in net cap charges. So if you're looking at, what did I say? They were at 25, 26. So about $20 million in net cap room to do whatever they want to do. Let's just take a look at their free agents, and then I'll get into possible cuts that are there. Let's see if there's any free agents that are really worth anything for them. Well, obviously, so, all right, so the big one, which I guess I should have known right off top of the bat, was Landon Collins. So Landon Collins is probably going to get a franchise tag. Collins' franchise tag is probably going to cost in the ballpark of $12 million. Safeties are very hard to value right now. Collins is on IR, but that shouldn't impact him at all. I think he's generally a highly regarded safety. I think whatever issues existed within the safety market will correct themselves this year. I do not think that Collins will be able to ask for the kind of money that was there at the top. You know, the Matthew deal, the Berry deal, the Rashad Jones deal. Those are all kind of dud contracts that happened. But he's going to be in line with those guys at the 10 to 11 million number. And I think that's probably what he's going to be looking for, somewhere between 11 and 12 million a year. I think that could be out there if he goes. I think he's got a lot of those qualities that you kind of want in a player. I think he's someone that probably stands out as a leader as well. So I think he could be an $11 to $12 million a year player. But obviously, if you end up franchise tagging him, now you're looking at about $8 million in cap space. So that's nothing. That means you're not going to have any cap room to do anything because you're going to want to carry most of that into the season. You have Curtis Riley, B.W. Webb, John Greco. These are all kind of minimum salary type guys. You know, guys who maybe will make, well, someone like a Greco, if he came back, that's a minimum salary type guy. Webb is probably a minimum guy. Riley could be someone that, you know, gets a little bit more than that, you know, a couple million, nothing excessive. Jamon Brown at guard, relatively low cost, I would think, you know, $3 million, $4 million, maybe less. Benny Fowler, he's been in and out. Diossi is probably going to go at this point. But even still, as a long snapper, what are you going to make, 1.1? Mario Edwards probably goes. Russell Shepard, that's relatively cheap. So really the main one for them to consider is Landon Collins, and then it's just a decision of how you can kind of fit the other guys in. So the Giants are going to have to do some things with their cap for next year to make it viable if they want to do something in free agency. So let's just look at some of these players that can be released and what they would save and what does and doesn't make sense. So Vernon, I think, is the most logical of the cuts. I can't see any reason why he would be on the team next year. He's set to make $15.5 million while counting $19.5 million on the cap. He's just not productive enough. He's never healthy. You just can't invest that. If they release him, they'll save $11.5 million. They'll still take an $8 million dead money charge, which obviously is not too good. But still, you're saving more than you're losing there. So I would say that one is a no-brainer. Now, the next ones are where you get into the question marks. I'm sorry, I'll give you one more no-brainer. The next no-brainer is Jonathan Stewart. They won't pick up his option, and they'll save on him $2.5 million. There's basically nothing dead on that. So that one's a given as well. So you've got those two who are your no-brainer cuts. Now you run more into the question mark categories. And there's some other lower-level guys. So I'll mention those towards the end here. Personally, I think that you've got Janoris Jenkins and you've got Alec Ogletree. So you've got Jenkins at corner making 11 and change next year with a $14.75 million salary cap hit. You can create 7.75 by releasing him. The negative on that is you have basically no cornerbacks at that point. So that's a negative, but I don't know if Jenkins is not good enough to justify that kind of salary. He's not good enough to justify that cap hit. The other one is Ogletree. You made the trade for Ogletree, so obviously the GM is much more invested here. They restructured the contract because they needed cap space this year. So they took what should have been no dead money in 2019 and they added a bunch of dead money to it. So Ogletree has a $10 million salary, $11.75 million cap number, 6.5 saved if they release him. It's quite possible both are going to be safe and the Giants are going to look to restructure to save some money again here. I'll just say one of them goes. And I'll just take Ogletree just because that's an easier position to fill, even though they traded that for that. So I'll just say between the two of them, let's assume that they save 6.5. You move down a little bit more. You have Red Ellison. He makes $5 million this year as a 5.75 salary cap charge. And let's see. I'm sorry, he makes under 5. He makes $4.5 million this year, has a 5.75 salary cap charge, and you can save $3.25 by releasing him. That's another one of those players where you say to yourself, okay, the coach loves him. You know, he does a lot of things that are good, but where you're at as a team right now, are you better with him on the team or are you better with $3 million in cap space? In my opinion, you're probably better off with $3 million in cap space. So I'll mark him down as gone. It's another 3-2-5. And you go down the list. Connor Barwin is certainly going to be gone. That saves you 1-5. And anybody else that would save you anything noteworthy? No. So obviously those are the guys, and then we'll get to Eli Manning. But if they cut all those players that I mentioned there, and assuming they franchise tag Landon Collins, you're looking at about $33 million in cap room. Let's say the Giants run very tight on the cap next year and are happy with $4 million. That leaves you with about $29 million in cap space to actually use in free agency. So it's not a big explosion whatsoever. And that's assuming that Ogletree is gone. There's a possibility he won't be. Then the question is, what do you do with Eli? So Eli Manning is going to make next year $17 million. He has a $23.2 million cap number, and they save $17 million by cutting him. I think it's a very fair question to say, what are you better off having? Are you better off having $17 million going into free agency and signing a quarterback that will probably cost you $8 million maybe? So you'll have $9 million extra in cap space to either save for the future or spend this year? Or are you better off keeping Eli at the cap number that he's on, playing it out and trying to let him retire a Giant and go one more time with this team and just keep your fingers crossed that something can happen? And I would move on from him, but I think the Giants organization will probably keep him. I think the way they're going to look at this is a comment that I get a lot on Twitter when I mention cutting some of these players, with the exception of Vernon. But you know, you talk about cutting a player like a Jenkins and you say, well, he's going to save you $7 million on the cap. And you say, well, with $7 million, are we going to get a player comparable to Jenkins? Probably not. Probably not for this year. But not only are you saving $7 million this year, well, that means that the $14 million or however much you were going to pay him this year, you're not paying him. So that's something that's saved for the future, because you're still going to have dead money you have to account for if you move him next year. So you are saving, you know, money that can get pushed to the future as well. That's money that's no longer in the Giants' budget that they can use to spend in the future. And on top of that, you say, well, are you going to get someone as good as player X and Y? You know, are you going to get someone as good as Ogletree? Well, no, but what has Ogletree gotten you so far? What has Jenkins gotten you so far? What have these players gotten you that make you so afraid to move on? And it's one of the tough things when you have that team and you do see a couple guys who can make plays. And you say, well, we're not going to get a comparable player. But sometimes when you're building towards the future, you just want to find someone who's useful, that's a lower cost, because having that money, that more money overall that you can spend on other players, is going to help you improve. Because if you keep all these guys, you know, where I talked about that roster construction of all these street free agents and low-level veterans, well, that's what you're going to be stuck with again. But I think the Giants are going to be happy doing that, and I think they're probably going to look at this and say, we can get something from Eli, we're going to do what we can, Beckham's going to be healthy, we're going to have an extra year in Shurmur's offense, Barkley's going to be even better, And next year, we can guarantee it's going to turn around. And if it doesn't, well, then we're ready to move on from Eli. I kind of think that's the way that it's going. And you're probably going to see more kicking of the can down the road. But I don't think that that's the right decision. I don't think that that's a logical course of action. And, of course, nobody wants to punt on a season. But by getting rid of some guys on a team that was a six-win team, that doesn't mean you're punting on the season. You're just trying to find ways to get better. And one of those ways to do that is to probably turn someone like a Jenkins maybe into two players. And you're probably better off because you're probably going to be better off with two mid-tier guys than Jenkins at 14 and some other guy for the minimum veteran number. Jenkins just isn't, they're not good enough to justify those big numbers that you're paying them. So if it was me, I would move on. I think the Giants will probably double down again on a large number of these players. Now, if they do move on from Eli, Eli has a roster bonus that's due early in the year, so they'd have to cut him pretty early. People have asked about a no-trade clause. I don't see why he would waive that because he's probably better off just becoming a free agent and seeing if he can find a place. And that's probably better for everyone involved. I don't think they'd be able to trade him. I think if you were going to do it, you probably handle it in the same way that the Indianapolis Colts did when they released his brother. You know, you do it kind of in February or whatever, and you do it with a little ceremony and, you know, just kind of explain that, unfortunately, this is the business of the NFL. Last year would have been the perfect time to do it with the number two overall pick versus where they're at right now, where there's no given that they're going to take quarterback. But I think that's probably the right way to handle it, is to do something like that and you get rid of them. Other question I've gotten a lot and will probably show up as well. Well, what about Beckham? You know, and I get that people are negative on him now because the consistency isn't there. The numbers aren't there. He's not always on the field. And obviously, if you are a Giants fan and you live in the New York area, his number one critic is back on the radio and Mike Francesa. I like Francesa. I like a lot of the things that he does. I think his show has probably fallen off a bit, his time off. I don't think really changed that. I think he clearly gets certain vendettas against players. He's had a vendetta against Beckham for some time. Every now and then he'll pop up with some comments that lead you to think otherwise. But for the most part, he is on the super negative Beckham bandwagon, and that rubs off. You know, when you have a big audience and you have a lot of people to listen to you and you have opinions like that, it does begin to rub off. And I've seen that happen through the years. And I think that's been a big reason why Beckham has been so negatively received pretty much since the boat incident in New York, maybe even a little bit before that, where there was talk about just some of the things that he would kind of get away with on the field, maybe that other players didn't. The cost to moving him is pretty much astronomical. Dead money if you cut him would be $35.5 million. That's pretty, if you traded him, let's see what that number is. And my computer is acting sluggish again. Well, you figure it could, you know, you never get away with that. Let me do this through the back end. Let me look up Odell here. You know, it's probably something like $16 million if you traded him. Yeah, $16 million if you traded him. They did make the trade with Pierre Paul, so I can't say they wouldn't do it, but that was not one of Gettleman's deals. This would look very negative that the Giants decided to pay him $21 million to play this year when they could have paid him $8.6 million, you know, to essentially pay for him to go to another team. I think that would look really bad on Gettleman. So I don't think there would be any logic to doing it unless they were given such a shocking offer for him where you can really sell that as something smart to do. But just from a financial perspective, you know, 16 million dead, and to go to your boss and say, well, yeah, you know, we gave him last year a $13-14 million raise to just turn around and trade him so another team could have him for cheaper. It doesn't really make a lot of sense. So I don't see any reason why he wouldn't be there next year. But the Giants clearly have to hope that he can be healthy and that he can kind of go back to being that real lightning rod in the passing game. They absolutely have to hope for that. I think if he doesn't, you know, if he's just going to be a really good but not great receiver that gives you some kind of headaches for whatever other reasons, it's probably at that point is when you start looking to say, well, maybe I do need to move on. That probably is not going to happen until 2020, if at all. Just some other things for the Giants in general. I mean, they have to do better in free agency. You know, the left tackle, I get it. You know, they had to do what they had to do. The problem there is you come from a Patriots system where the way that that system works and the way that they play there is very different. And a lot of guys who have left that team have just not done very well at a large number of positions. So I think you always proceed with caution a lot of times when you do spend top dollar on players that are leaving New England. You know, just seeing, it's not a very good roster. Just overall, I'm just looking at some of the names. Excuse me. They have a good set of skill players and just nothing else. I mean, they just don't. Let me see where they're valued positionally. And then I'll get into your questions here. Let's see. Where do they rank? Where's the Giants? Giants. Okay. So despite the big contract for Jenkins, the Giants rank 16th among cornerbacks in spending. They rank 32nd for defensive line. That's a little misleading because Vernon is now considered a linebacker. They rank 32nd for guards and centers. They rank 3rd on linebackers. That's Vernon, that's Ogletree, so they spend a lot of money on those guys. 12 on offensive tackles, 14th at quarterback, 7th at running back, 29th at safety. That'll obviously change with Collins becoming a veteran. 28th on special teams, 18th at tight end, and 11th on wide receiver. So they don't really have much in the way of dominant spending groups other than linebacker, where they switch defenses and they paid a lot for Ogletree. And running back, obviously, because Barkley's rookie contract is so high, that automatically just is going to jump where they are in terms of spending on that position. So no real dominant group that stands out. But from a talent perspective, you know, they do have talent, wide receiver, tight end, running back. You need a guy that can get them the ball, though. And Eli Manning is not that guy anymore. So let's look up all your questions here and let's see what we can get to on this. Give me a minute and I'll pull these all up. All right, so let's run through these questions. All right, how can the Giants reduce Eli Manning's 2019 cap hit without extending him? That question's from Larry. That's a difficult one because that means you're going to have to go to Eli Manning and you're going to have to ask him to basically take a pay cut. So there's two ways that the Giants can do this. So the logical way is you go to him and you say, look, Eli, you're going to make 16.5. You're going to make 17 million next year. Maybe you can go to him and say, listen, what if we get rid of your roster bonus, which is 5 million, or they would probably pay him his roster bonus and take away some of his paragraph 5. What if we get rid of 5 million of your salary and we'll roll that into 5 million of incentives? And those incentives will be based on something like team success, you know, 8 wins, something like that, play time, and you know, maybe some other statistical milestones, but probably more likely based on team success and getting to the playoffs and stuff like that, to where he can win that money back if he does that. Those are the same kind of things that John Elway did with his brother towards the end. I think it's a tricky thing to navigate, because it's like you're going to someone who has probably not felt too good about his position within the team the last 2 years in the way that certain things have gone. And again, that's kind of assigning blame, because it's like if you go to Manning and you say, will you take a $5 million pay cut? Well, if I was Manning, I would probably then look at some of those other players on the team and say, well, did you go to Jenkins for a pay cut? You know, did you go to Ogletree for a pay cut? Did you go to Beckham for a pay cut? You know, did you go to any of these other kind of expensive players and also ask them to take a pay cut? Because the answer would probably be no. So I think that's a difficult situation, but that would be one way to do it. And you could probably shave $5 million off if Eli was willing to do something like that. The other way to do it is to add what are called voidable contract years. And what that means is the Giants would add on a 2020, 2021, 2022 year kind of thing. And they would take his salary, they would convert it to a signing bonus, and they would defer money to 2020 and beyond. And what that does is that basically gives them the ability to create cap space now to try and improve this team that has Eli Manning on it, and kind of just defer when you're going to take that dead money for him, which would be basically when his contract would expire next year. You know, let's say that they, you know, how much did they want to convert? You know, if he's going to make 17, maybe convert half of it, you know, 8 or so, you know, something like that. You could bring his number down by $6-7 million this year, at the end of the day. So that's another way that they could do it. It's kicking the can, but it does give you the ability to say, well, we're going to do this with Eli again. We're going to come back with the Jenkins and the Ogletree. And well, this is how we're going to get our $7 million that I said we'd get from cutting Ogletree or from cutting Jenkins. We can get it this way with Eli by adding these voidable contract years and allowing us to reduce when we're going to take cap charges for him. So that would be the other way that they could do it without, you know, really committing to him beyond this year. And it's going to look bad if the team does poorly and then you're sitting there next year with $6 or $7 million in dead money for Eli Manning. But realistically, that at that point, that's just an accounting issue. So while it's not great, I think you can at least say, okay, I get why they're doing it. Let's see. Patrick, thoughts on designating Cree Martin as a post-June 1? Same question for Rhett Ellison. Okay, so a post-June 1, if you're not too familiar with that term, what a post-June 1 is you're allowed to designate up to 2 players a year as a cut in March that doesn't actually process until June from an accounting perspective. Players become, they're free agents, free to sign anywhere else. But it allows you to take the majority of the dead money in 2020 in this case instead of 2019. So let's look up Martin. What would they save on him? Kareem Martin has $1.5 million guaranteed next year. If I'm looking at this right, let me make sure I'm looking at the right year. Yeah, he has $1.5 guaranteed. So they could do the June 1 on him. By doing the June 1, they would create an extra $1.2 million in cap space this year. But you wouldn't realize that until June 2nd. So I kind of think that would make him not a good candidate, because if the Giants are going to be hard up for cap space, you're probably going to want that cap space in March. not that cap space in June, unless they're just going to do something to be right on the edge with their rookies. Let me just see here. So if they release him as a regular cut, he'd have a $3.8 million dead money hit. So you gain about $1.7 million in cap space. See, the thing is with him, with the guaranteed salary, that doesn't go off to next year. No matter what, that's going to hold this year. So if they designate him as a June 1, you're carrying $5.5 million into there. So you'd gain an extra $1.7 million. I don't know. I kind of think you'd be better off with the 1.7 in March than, I'm sorry, the 2.8 in March than, no, the 1.7 in March than, you know, getting 2.8 in June. So I think if they were going to release him, they would probably release him early on. In Ellison's case, I would think the same thing. I mean, do you really want to carry him at 5.75 all the way to June 2nd? I don't think so. You know, you'd save 3.25 by releasing him outright. You know, versus getting 4.5 in June. Okay. I think when you look at those, if the decision for the Giants is that they're going to run right up against the salary cap all the way through June, and they're not going to sign any of their draft picks, and they're going to create that money to sign their draft picks come June 2nd, I can see the logic in using it on Ellison. I think it makes more sense to use on Ellison than it probably does on Martin. So I guess that's what I would do. But in any event, I think I'd prefer to not be kicking the can down on some of these. I don't think that, if it's me, I'm not really worried about spending big in free agency this year anyway. The Giants may have a totally different thought process on that, and they probably do. But if it was me, I probably wouldn't be looking to spend that big anyway. I just want to get my books in order. There's also no reason for the Giants to have to cut these players on the June 1 because I don't believe, unless Martin's is different, I don't believe any of them have anything that vests this year. So part of the reason that you use a June 1 designation is to prevent from having to pay a off-season roster bonus or to have a salary that goes from injury protected to fully protected. That's not really the case for either of these guys. What would a long-term contract for Landon Collins look like? Let's just pull up the big safety contracts and see. You know, I said before I was just giving a number out there of, you know, $11 million or so a year. But let's actually pull up the numbers and let's see what the market is at the top, because I'm pretty sure he's going to end up at the top of the market. All right, so let's pull up the key metrics page in the premium section here. And this just gives you a quicker overview of a lot of the main things, main metrics that you use valuing contracts. And we're going to look at safeties. All right, let's see. We've got... So the deals, I think, that are just going to get thrown out right off the bat is Eric Berry at 13, Cam Chancellor at 12, and Rashad Jones at 12. Those were just deals that were illogical, I think is the best way to put it. Berry and Chancellor clearly busted on those deals. You say, well, you can't predict injury. Sure, but those deals were just too massive. Jones was very similar. That was an extension that made no sense to go where they did on that deal. You've got Joyner on the franchise tag. You throw that out. That's just a tag number. So to me, the real market is Harrison Smith at 10.25. He has $28.5 million totally guaranteed, $15.3 million fully guaranteed, and a $10 million signing bonus. His three-year cash is $32.25 million. So I think probably what you're looking at with Collins is to probably hit somewhere around that $11 million number. You know, we talked about some of the ways the Giants do those guarantees, so they might be on the higher end. But I think what you would look at there would probably be to hit the $30 million total guaranteed and probably something like $20 million fully guaranteed. I think if he gets the 20 full, let me see, who else has more fully guaranteed? What would be something that would go? You throw out Jamal Adams, he's a rookie. You know, Devin McCourty got $22 million fully guaranteed. So I think one of the things that you could probably do is go to something like, and you know, we talked about how the Giants have big full guarantees anyway. You could probably go to $24 million on the full guarantee. You have your biggest signing bonus is also McCourty at 15. So go a little bit higher than that. Go to 16. That probably gets the deal done. I would think that you can hit on a couple of those metrics, and that's probably enough to get it done. I don't think you want to get those annual values, though, of those other players. And I just don't think that they're valid contracts, and I think you just need to kind of make that known right off the bat that those contracts aren't going to happen there. And that was from Chris, that question. Patrick had another question here. Also wondering, what would you think is a fair contract with the Giants to attempt to re-sign Jamon Brown? Good addition, but becomes a free agent at the end of the year. I'd have to look closer at him. I really haven't looked enough. You know, players like that generally don't go for too much money. You know, he's not going to stand out on the Giants' offensive line by any stretch. They're not a good enough unit. They're not a good enough team. You look at his career here. You're looking at someone who was a third round pick, you know, from the Rams, goes from there, ends up on the Giants. You know, he is a starter. You know, most of those players usually go for something like, you know, $4 million a year. Let's see. Let me just look up anything else on him just to try and get an idea here where he would go. I'm just pulling up some of these, some of the numbers for the other players there that play interior. You know, he could probably play tackle too. I would think you'd max out at four, but probably less than that. You know, you're probably looking at 3 to 3.5, something like that. That's usually for someone who's going to be a low level starter. That's usually where they end up. You know, maybe some extra money for certain other things. David asked the value of OV at this point. I think it's the biggest Giants offseason question, as they seem intent to stay with Eli regardless. I think that's probably true about Eli. I don't think Vernon's worth more on the open market than maybe 8.5. He's got a good agent. Maybe he can sneak a couple more dollars out of him. But I equate players like that to like a Mario Williams, guys who just made a lot of money that probably shouldn't have, and they kind of just fell apart. And then there's a market there that's for him for a little bit on a shorter term deal, but usually they don't even live up to that and then end up out of the league. Kim asks, general predictions on, I'm sorry, that's Reese. general predictions on what's going to happen to Eli, please. Hope you're doing well. Eli, I think Eli is going to stick with the Giants. I just don't see them coming to a divorce because they're not going to be in a position to get somebody better. And I don't think they can guarantee that they can sign somebody in free agency better. And there's probably only one name that I think would definitely be better, and that's Bridgewater, assuming he can be healthy. But there's no guarantee the Giants can get him. So by the time you have to release Eli, it's not going to be time for you to go and sign another player. And then on top of that, the Giants can't, as an organization, you just can't do this. A guy that's been there for that long, has won two Super Bowls, is a former number one pick, and I know he's not the greatest quarterback in the world. He's probably going to go to the Hall of Fame and is probably going to be looked at now as the low bar for the Hall of Fame. But you absolutely cannot go out there, sign another player, and then cut Eli Manning the next day. It's just, that's just so bad from a PR perspective. You just can't do it. So I think they're just going to double down and they're going to keep him. Okay, Andre asks, and this is a good question. How would you suggest a 3-13 or a 5-11 team go about their finances? We know Eli, Jenkins, Vernon, and Ogletree should be cut as they're too expensive for a bad team. But in terms of spending, how should you be using cap space? Do you do big signings like 2016? No, you absolutely don't do big signings like 2016. Big signings are not going to take a bad team and turn them good. Big signings are just going to take a bad team and probably make it harder for them to be good for the next couple of years. Those big signings work out really well when you already have a couple of players in there who, you know, are younger and are really ready to contribute. So I don't think you go about it that way. However, I don't think it means that you completely avoid free agency. You know, there's a lot of people who have this opinion. And sorry, my mouse is going haywire here. Let me unplug it. There are some people, I think, that have an opinion that if you're bad, it doesn't pay to attempt to be good. And that's not true either. I think what you have to do if you're a team like the Giants is you're going to have a lot of draft picks this year. I think they have 11. Some are high, some not so much. You want to bring in a couple of solid veterans. You know, those guys that $5, $6, $7, $8 million a year that are going to bring some type of veteran leadership to a team. You know, some of those guys that make that kind of money are kind of overachievers. They're those guys who probably practice really hard and have done a lot to kind of get their careers to a point that might be a little bit better than some people expected in the first place for them. And I think you target players like that because you want to go out there next year, and I think you want to try and have a team that at the very least is going to get you to like a 500 mark. You want to have that. And I think you're better accomplishing it that way. And I know a lot of that is probably short term because a lot of those guys you're going to sign are only going to be on 2 and 3 year deals, but they're there to hold that fort down to where you can develop talent, and you are never going to feel boxed in by a contract to say, well, we've got Vernon, so we can't draft an edge rusher, or we have Jenkins, so why should we draft a cornerback high? Or, well, we've got Eli, he's expensive, why should we draft a quarterback in the first round? You don't want to be put in that position to where you ever feel like you can't draft a position because you already have it, because your team's not good enough to really ever have that as a consideration. So I think that's probably what I would do. I would say if you were a team and you, let's say you made all those cuts that you suggested, and I think those are reasonable because they're not giving you that kind of value that you would keep those players. So let's say you did that. And let's say that brought you up to 50 or 60 million in cap room. Well, I would probably take half of that money and I would say, let's see how many guys, decent guys, we can get for half of that. So let's say that we have 30 million in cap room that we can spend, and 30 million we're going to save for the future. So we're going to take 30 million that we're going to carry over to 2020. and we're going to have $30 million that we can use in 2019. Could that be five players that make around $6 million a year? Maybe something like that. You know, you get a couple of those guys. You can find for $6 million. You can go and find yourself a good right tackle. Absolutely can find yourself a good right tackle. Not a great year for guards, but you know, you can probably go out there and you can find a guard, or if you need another center, okay, you got to double that number. You got to spend around 9 or 10, you know, to get somebody good in there, somebody competent at least in there for that amount of money. But that's probably what I would look to do. Take half of it, say we're going to use half of it to get as many decent players as we can get that are going to help us this year and next, but aren't going to be those over-the-top signings that are going to cost you, $17 million like Vernon, or $14 million, or $12 million like Jenkins, or whatever those numbers were. You're not going there. You're going the tier below that. And up to a certain point, and I want to have a lot of money that I'm going to be able to carry to the future. And yeah, there's some leeway, there's some wiggle room that you could have to take a little bit more this year. But I think that's probably what makes the most sense, is to earmark a part of it for this year and part of it for the future. Josh asks, don't you think Jenkins and Vernon are more valuable on their cap numbers next year than potential free agents given the market? No on Vernon. I'm going to say no on that one because he's not productive enough. He has times where he is, but I don't think you can count on him to be healthy. If you can't count on somebody for 16 games, I can't see how they could be worth, whatever that number is. What's his cap number? I close my Giants page here, but Vernon's cap number next year is 19.5 on a 15.5 salary. It's just, he's not worth it. I just don't see where that would be. Let's say you saved, what do you save on him? What did I say? About 11.5 million. If you spent that 11.5 million on somebody else, I'll just throw it out there, for maybe 8 million, you can get Fowler for a year. You're probably going to end up getting, it's a different type of production. It's not going to be the all around kind of production. But I think in terms of probably just kind of getting after the quarterback and maybe not having the run defense, but having a couple extra bucks that you can spend to bring in another defender or a different player that can fill a role, you're probably going to find yourself better off than just having Vernon at that number. Jenkins, no, you probably won't. The question I think with Jenkins is, do you want to invest that money for this year on him? And I don't think the team is good enough for that. I mentioned that before. Let me just pull up his numbers here. Let's pull up Janoris Jenkins. So essentially what you would be doing if you keep Jenkins next year is you would be paying $14.75 on the cap for him. And then you would pay on the cap next year $3.5 million in dead money. So you'd be paying a total of $18.25 million in cap charges for Jenkins plus an $11.25 million salary. If you cut him, you would only pay a total of $7 million on the cap. That's his dead money. And zero in cash. So you know, that's a big savings. Essentially what you'd be doing if you cut him this year, you save $11.25, that's in cash, and that money, you know, that money that's also saved on the cap, you know, that means that next year you're going to have an extra $11.25 million in cap room. You're going to have the $7.75 or whatever it is you save this year And let's say you carried that over to next year and you would have no dead money on the books for him. Normally that would be 3.5. So you're looking at an extra $11.25 million that you could have to spend in 2019. I'm sorry, in 2020 by cutting him in 2019. I think when you look at it that way and you look at the future, I just think it makes more sense because it's just, I don't think it's worth sinking that money into the position based on where the team is. Now, if the team had been 9-7 this year, I'd probably have a different opinion, but they weren't, and they haven't been really for some time. So I think that's the way I would look at that one. Let's see what else. Please post the link from Bam Bam. I will do that when I get this uploaded. And let's see, next set of questions here. Links to the podcast. Thomas, will Eli be back with the Giants in 2019? Yep, I think so. CJK, we hear generational running backs way too often, but it looks like Barkley may actually fit that description after an incredible year in a suspect offense. Makes passing on a QB last year any better? No, it really doesn't. It doesn't make it worse, and it makes it harder, I think, to have a reasonable discussion again on it because you can't argue with his production. You can't argue with those big plays and everything else, but one, it's too early to say generational for anybody. Who knows how long he's going to last running backs. We've seen running backs be dominant for 2 years and then disappear after that. A lot of players don't last in the league. You know, who knows how long he will actually last for, but either way, he doesn't touch the ball every play. No matter what he can do on the field, he's never going to have the importance of a quarterback. He's never going to put up the statistics of a quarterback. I don't care how many completions he has. I don't care how many rushing yards he has. The quarterback is always going to be more valuable. And if your decision tree is, I could have had, and again, we don't know what Sam Darnold is going to be, but let's say I could have had Sam Darnold and it's not fair to say Philip Lindsay because that's kind of a flukish kind of name to pull up. But if I could have that, that and a Darnold versus, or, you know, even if you just went the free agent route, you know, who would be a free agent running back? That would be somebody who you could sign. Let me just see here. A Lamar Miller type, you know, someone like that, where are you better off? Are you better with Sam Darnold and someone like a Lamar Miller for that money? Or are you better off with Ryan Fitzpatrick and Saquon Barkley? Long-term, I think you're much better off with Darnold and Miller and taking a stab in the draft and hoping you get that Philip Lindsay than you are with Barkley and quarterbacks that just, you know, are never going to get you to the playoffs. And it just becomes a never-ending cycle. You can never change the cycle with the quarterback position really until you go into the draft. It's very difficult to do. The only teams that have really been able to change that cycle without the draft are the Saints with Drew Brees. If you want to say the Broncos with Peyton Manning for those couple of years, I'll give you that. I don't think you're going to see that Minnesota with Kirk Cousins. I think Kirk Cousins gave you the ability to at least have a decent warm body there. Alex Smith with the Chiefs. I don't think that was anything spectacular. And that was a trade. Who else? It's just not a lot. I can't really think of too many off the top of my head here. I just think you're better off with the quarterback. Even when you take the risk factors into it, I just think that he can never be good enough to pass up what could be a great quarterback. I just don't see the logic in that. Should the Giants trade down and take Kyler Murray? I don't know anything about quarterbacks in college or anything else, so I can't say one way or the other. The Giants, I don't think you want to trade down just in general. I don't think you want to trade down if your goal is to get a quarterback. You don't want to trade down and hope that somebody is still there. Teams are so bullish on quarterbacks, you have to take one when you're there. I don't think you can play it to where you can trade down. Now, if you're going to go one spot, you know, if you end up with seven and the Bills end up with eight, and there's a player that the Bills really, 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 really want, and for some reason they're worried about something, yeah, you can swap picks. Or let's say the I'll give you an example. Let's say the Giants are seven, the Bills are eight, and some other team is nine. Let's say the team with a quarterback, that would be nine. The Buccaneers, let's say they're going to stick with Winston. And let's say the Buccaneers want to jump up to seven. You're not taking a big gamble by dropping down to nine because you know the Bills aren't going to take quarterbacks. So your only worry at that point is someone else trading up with the Bills. So maybe you can move down one or two spots, but I don't think you can do more than that and gamble if you're looking to take a quarterback. So I think if they're looking to take a quarterback, you're just going to stay wherever you are or move up. I don't think you're going to move down and hope you can get picks and still get your quarterback. Draft capital to move from second to mid one. I'm assuming that means second round to a mid first round pick. You're probably going to give up a number one for the next year. And it may depend on who you're going to get. But I think a lot of times you may give up a one for the next year. Certainly, I mean, I guess the other option would be maybe a two and a three this year. Giants, I don't think I have a three, but maybe a two and a three and then a two next year. Yeah, something like that is probably where you would go. But a lot of times it seems like the teams that go from the second round all the way up to the mid one usually probably end up parting with a first rounder for the next year, I would think. What are the odds that any of these guys, Eli Manning, Vernon Jenkins, are cap casualties in 2019? That's from Cody. I would say it's probably 70% that Eli and Jenkins are on the team next year, maybe even higher than that. I think Vernon is probably only he's probably a 70% chance. He's probably more than that. I would say he's got to be an 85 to 90% chance that he's cut. A rough but plausible step-by-step guide by how they could be a contender again by 2020. It's from Chris Jansen. Gosh, that is so hard because I just don't know enough about the draft to really say. You don't want to reach on a quarterback just because you're desperate for one. You know, that's how you end up with a lot of these quarterbacks in the first rounds that are like, your Blaine Gabberts and your Christian Ponders. One of the reasons why sometimes when you do looks historically, some of those second and third overall picks have really not been that good. And some of the reason for that is you're not really getting the best players sometimes at those spots. You're getting the second and third best players because it's always coming out to be a quarterback. And teams push on the quarterbacks nowadays. Well, it's been that way for a long time. There was a period of time where you didn't even see many quarterbacks probably going after the second round. And a lot of them were moving up into the first. You know, your guys like J.P. Losman types and stuff like that. And, Rex Grossman. And, it's because the position is so important, where I talked about how you can't trade down to try and play games with a quarterback. And that's why, because people are moving up. I would think that the Giants' best option is, if it was me, I think I would probably cut Eli. I'd cut Vernon. I'd cut Jenkins. I think you just need to remove all of those negatives that existed from Reese's big spending year. I think you just need to get that all off the team. I think you need that attitude off the team. And that's not to say that these guys have bad attitudes, but I think there's just a culture that comes with that group. And in Eli's case, it's clearly a performance issue. I think you move away from those guys and you create as much cap room as you can this year. Like I said, we're going to spend half of it. And I am going to go there, and I know it's a tough one to say, well, you know, you're going to get this guy, but I'm probably going to do what I can to, to try and get someone like a Teddy Bridgewater. I think Bridgewater is the only guy who at least makes sense, because from a traditional standpoint as to what you would look for in a quarterback, and I know there's questions about his health, but you are looking at someone who is a late first rounder, someone who has talent, someone who has quarterbacked some decent teams. Might he be a game manager? Yeah, but at least he's young. That's the kind of person that is going to have his game elevated somewhat by the fact that the Giants have great skill position players. And I think, unlike a Fitzpatrick type, there could be some sustainability in that. There may not be. But you can take a two-year flyer on him. If you have to overpay him, and by overpay, I think overpaying is like, $10 million a year. I'm not talking about doing something crazy. You go to $10 million a year with incentives. All these quarterbacks get incentives based on, playoffs and stuff like that, to where you could be a lot more expensive. But I think that at least gives you a chance to be relevant now and maybe get your quarterback of the future. Again, probably not, but I think it at least gives you an opportunity, because your next best option, just looking down this list, man, it's bad. Your next best option is Fitzpatrick. That's really your next best option, unless you're going to roll with your young guy right now. And maybe that's the other way to do it, is if you can't get Bridgewater, I guess your next thing to do is to say, well, we're going to have a quarterback competition between Ryan Fitzpatrick and Kyle Laletta. That's probably the next step that you go. And Fitzpatrick's not getting you to the playoffs. And Fitzpatrick is maybe going to even be a negative towards drafting a quarterback in the future. I don't know. Fitzpatrick can wind up with a 3-win season. He can wind up with like an 8 or a 9-win season. But there's no guarantee you're going to be in a position to get the quarterback anyway. I think those are the two routes that you can go. Bridgewater would be the top one that I would do. And the other thing is I'm going to try and sign a large number of players, or many, that are kind of those mid-tier guys that are going to be here and be relevant in 2019 and 2020. Maybe their contracts extend to 2021 or 2022. But it'll be feasible to release those players by then if I have to. And I think that's probably the strategy you have to use, to build up the team. They have a lot of draft picks this year. Those players all have to hit. Obviously that's easier said than done. But I think those are the things that I would look to do. I'm not trading Beckham. I'm not getting rid of them. I'm giving that another chance to happen. But I'm moving on from those other guys. I just can't. I don't think that I can invest another year in that. I just don't see how that's going to make sense. But I think my top hope would be Bridgewater. But my second one would be, can I catch lightning in a bottle with Fitzpatrick to at least be relevant playing into December? Or can I really catch lightning in a bottle with my draft pick? That's even better. And if they both flame out, well, maybe then I'm going to be in a position to draft a quarterback. But I think that's probably how they have to approach it. I think the Eli Manning one is just a dead end, and I don't think I would do that. Craig asks, after seeing the past offseason not work out well for the safety market, what does a long-term deal look like for Collins and his agent? What I'm assuming this is right tackle options. Do you see as a potential fit? So I'm guessing that's two questions in there. I don't think the safety market's going to have anything to do with Collins, because if you look at players who were extended last year, let me see if I have a couple of those up by year. Defense, safety, let's see. Let me sort by APY. Let me just look. You know, so we had the franchise tag on Joyner. Matthew signed as a street for $7 million. But more so than that, so we get to Tart, $6.5 million. I know it's only a 2-year deal. Ricardo Allen signs for $3 million at $6.5 million. You know, these aren't players that, you know, stand out. Quandre Diggs at $6.2 million. So really the issue was really Eric Reed, Kenny Vaccaro, and Trey Boston. And they were all free agents. I think there were reasons that went beyond football as to why those players didn't get signed. I think most of it was, I'm not going to use the collusion word, but I think there were negative feelings towards Eric Reed. And I think that did impact the other players as well, because I think there was a feeling like, well, you know, if we're not going to sign Reed, we can't make it like we just shunned one player, because that's what happened with Kaepernick. I don't think the owners got in a room and decided this. I think that was just a logical thought process that teams had when it came to this. And I think the other thing was, when you did look at some of the safety signings over the last couple of years, there was not as big of a need for safety as there usually is. So I don't think it's going to impact Landon Collins at all, because I think you're going to look at this more as an extension. You're going to look at him as a potential franchise player. And I think other teams would look at him as a franchise player. Eric Reed and Kenny Vaccaro are not franchise players. They never were. Right? They were drafted highly, and they're okay players. You know, that should fall in that $6 to $8 million category. Landon Collins should be much higher than that. So I don't think there's going to be anything that correlates from this year to next year as it goes regarding him. Right tackle, I would guess the guy from the Panthers, Darrell Williams, who was hurt this year. I think that would probably be the guy that they look at. Obviously, there's going to be a relationship with Gettleman there. I think that's the one that they may look at. Who are the trade candidates on the Giants? I don't think this is really anybody. I mean, who would you really want to trade for on the team? The guys probably make too much money. Would there be a little bit of a trade market for Jenkins? Probably not at his salary. You'd probably have to eat a little bit of it. Is there a market for Ellison at $5 million? I don't think so. Did you grow sour on someone like an Ingram? Maybe there would be a market for him. I don't think you're going to move him. I don't think you're going to get the right value for him. So I don't think there's really a lot of trade candidates going out of the Giants. Are the Saints going to keep Teddy? And if not, could you see him with the Giants? I could absolutely see him with the Giants. Will the Saints keep him? It's a possibility. You know, it depends. You know, does he believe that he could be the heir to Drew Brees? You know, if you think that, I would think that you are, you may re-sign there, because, you know, Drew Brees, you know, who knows how much longer he's going to play for. You know, could he retire? New Orleans is a great place to be, so I think it's a good fit. The Giants, I think it makes sense. Let's put it this way. If you're going to go to the veteran market, it makes a lot more sense to take him than Nick Foles. There's just much more upside there. I look at someone like a Nick Foles as someone who is, you know, maybe there's a nice role for him in Philadelphia. It's probably not going to work out anywhere else for him, or less likely to work out. So I would say that it makes sense for Bridgewater to come in. I think that would be reasonable. Giants free agent targets. This is from Chris. He likes to ask a lot of Giants questions. You know, I don't know directly. I do think there's certainly going to be interest in Bridgewater, even if it's in a backup role, I think they would still give some interest there because there's no guarantee he's going to find a starting location somewhere. Now, he may rather be a backup in New Orleans, but I think there could be some interest in that. I think Williams at right tackle. You know, maybe someone like Ramon Foster to come in as a cheaper option. He's veteran, you know, but a cheaper option for the offensive line to just give you a little bit more stability there. I'm not really sure at the other spots. I mean, I don't think there's going to be enough money to go around for the Giants this year to be big players. So, there's probably some value guys that they can find to man another corner spot or outside linebacker or something. But those are the names. I think the right tackle and maybe one of the guards would be the ones that I would probably focus on something that they would do. And last question, what's the realistic chance of getting Teddy Bridgewater? Depends probably a lot on the situation. You know, if the Giants can offer him a starting job and they're willing to do it on a two-year deal, I mean, that's a great opportunity for him because you're playing in New York. You know, you'll be a hero if you get the team back to like 8 or 9 wins. You've got a lot of talent on the team in Barkley and Beckham and Shepard and Ingram. So you have a built-in ability to probably do really well and then really cash in 2 years from now. So I think from that perspective, it makes a lot of sense. Because even if you lose games because the defense isn't that good, you do have an opportunity to be part of a prolific offense. And if you can be part of that, you're going to get paid somewhere, you know, down the line. So I think that that's a good match for both sides. Again, you know, I don't know if he would go for it, but I would think if the Giants are going to hand him the starting job, at least for a year or two, I would think that that's a pretty good spot, that he could be in. All right. So I think that's all the questions I have on the Giants. So hopefully that covered a lot of Giants related stuff. Let me just make sure I don't have anything else on my Twitter here. Internet is working slow. Nope, that should be it. So, you know, last week of the season, more interest probably in coaches getting fired than there are in the games. I'm not really too excited about most of these games this week. I don't think there's really even a point to going over them. Let's just look at the list of teams. What could be interesting coming Monday? I think the Miami Dolphins are very interesting. I think last week's loss was a big blow to the organization. I think the owner took that very hard. I'm going to assume that means Tannenbaum is out. I think they should be cleaning house. I think, they if they move Tannenbaum, I think they should move the coach. I think they should move the general manager. I think that's really what they should do. It doesn't sound like they will. Sounds like Tannenbaum may go, and then they'll give a new president to take some time to really decide how to reorganize the entire team. Todd Bowles is certainly going to be out with the Jets. I think that's been pretty clear for probably the last 7 or 8 weeks. So I think he'll go. Ravens, they're not going to fire Harbaugh. That's pretty obvious. I don't know if he's going to look now for a raise to try and get released to go and try and find a better job somewhere. I don't know if you consider that one totally done yet, as to what's going to happen there. I think Tomlin will be fine in Pittsburgh no matter what happens. Cleveland's an interesting one. You know, they've had a hot finish. I don't know if anyone really looks at Williams as a long-term solution. My thought is they'll probably move on, even though he did well for them this year. I think I don't think that anyone's going to expect them to get that 2 years in a row. So I think they'll move on from him. Houston, Indy, Tennessee, they should all be fine. Jaguars. Gosh, you know, Jaguars try to pin this on a lot of people this year. I think Marone will get through it one more year. He may be a candidate to be let go very early next season, though, if things don't improve. Denver, that would be surprising if they kept their coach. He's been really a disaster. their collapse late in the season has really been almost unexplainable. One of the few coaches I've seen Bowles clearly outcoach when I watch those two teams play one another. I would think he's out. Dallas is obviously fine. Philly is fine. Washington, they're just so odd. I'm going to guess that they're fine. Shermer will be back with the Giants, Bears, Vikings. Packers already fired their coach. Lions, I don't think that they'll fire Patricia, though. Clearly, there's a lot of negatives there, and there could be an agenda to get him moved. Saints, Falcons, probably okay. Cutter should be gone in Tampa. I think Rivera stays in Carolina. Not a good season. They got off to a good start, and things went downhill from there. They haven't drafted well. They're just not getting the production they need, and Cam just looks beat up. You know, just watching him throw, I don't even know why he was on the field at times a couple weeks ago. You know, watching him throw the football. And they're out there with guys that, you know, would be tryouts for the AAF or XFL. So he's playing quarterback for them. I don't know how you blame them for anything. Rams, Seahawks, obviously fine. 49ers will be fine. Cardinals should fire their coach. That would be surprising if they didn't. So I think those are the openings that we're looking at. And then we'll get into the draft order stuff. And, you know, there's a couple of teams that can get that number one pick. Probably by the time you listen to that, it'll be decided on. Arizona is probably the most likely. If I had to guess, it's probably going to go Arizona, San Francisco, Jets, Raiders. Is probably going to be your top four with, I guess, the Lions is number five. I forget who the Lions play this week. Who do they play the Packers? Or do they play the Bears or something? Let me see. They play the Packers. They'll probably lose to the Packers. Packers, at least give it a shot. Packers are weird. They look like they had quit early in that game last week, and then Rodgers just woke up, went crazy. So I would think the top five will probably stay the way they are. San Francisco might be the most likely to get a win. They're the ones, I think, playing the hardest. You know, the Raiders are giving it a shot, too. So I can't say that it's negative on the Raiders. Jets have given it some shots as well, but their defense just does not hold up at all in these games. I got to imagine the Patriots will be out for blood in that one. So I guess that's everything. So anyway, this is we're going on about 2 hours here. It's pretty late, so I'm going to call this one a night. And then we'll see what we do next week. I'll see if we come back with another team or if we just start getting into free agency previews now that the season is officially done. Maybe it might be a good time to make that turn just to start doing that. And maybe go over just a couple of teams at once, just doing kind of short features per team. Going maybe division by division or something like that. So we'll see next week how we end up doing it. So thanks again for listening. Enjoy the final week of the season, and we'll be back next week with some playoffs.